jump into the epic world of Avatar: The Last Airbender.
With Nickelodeon's official companion podcast, Avatar: Braving the Elements.
Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Listen to Avatar: Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome one and all to The Late Show. I'm your host, Stephen Colbert. Happy Friday, everybody. Happy Friday to you all, my friends. It's a big day for so many of the world's religions, because right now it is Good Friday, the start of Passover. We're also in the midst of Ramadan. So happy Rama Good Pasadan Over Day to you all.
Yes,
mix
indeed.
That up.
Yeah.
Reminds me of that classic joke. A priest, a rabbi, and an imam walk into a bar, then walk right out because they're supposed to be at church, Seder, and or fasting. Now, the last time the Abrahamic religions all celebrated major festivals on the same day was over 30 years ago. So, 2020? For those celebrating Easter... That takes a minute. For those celebrating Easter, congrats on making it through Lent. Traditionally, many Catholics use Lent as a time to abstain from all meat except fish. In fact, McDonald's says 25% of their annual Filet-O-Fish sales happen during the 6 weeks of Lent. The other 75% comes when they drench that patty with barbecue sauce and call it a McRib. But same stuff.
You can't prove it.
It's not the same stuff.
You loving?
But it turns as a workaround because capybara, beaver, and other aquatic animals count as fish during Lent, which explains the popularity of the new seafood restaurant, Long John Beavers. Here's how it started. Back in the 16th century, the Vatican granted the Venezuelan church request that capybara be counted as fish, not meat, for Lenten purposes, because they were semi-aquatic, strong swimmers, and had sort of webbed feet, which means it's also technically okay to eat Aquaman. And now, not sure what that sound was. That was either being upset or great longing. Now, it's time for a Late Show idiot update. You see...
Well, actually...
Last week, I told you about two folks who were either idiots or spies who were arrested for impersonating federal agents and supplying Secret Service personnel with gifts such as rent-free apartments and iPhones. Wait a second. So Secret Service agents are paid so poorly that they need free phones and shelter? Well, that explains their new recruitment ad. The elite, the worthy, free muffins in the dumpster out back. According to one of the defendants, the man had no intention of compromising any federal agent and only provided gifts to agents with whom he had a genuine friendship and never asked for anything in return. And the judge more or less believed that story. So instead of sending them to jail, he ordered both men to remain in home confinement subject to GPS monitoring with their parents. I'd rather go to jail. All right, listen up, new meat. Dinner is at 4:30. Then at 6, we watch Wheel of Fortune. After that, you need to help Dad with his Yahoo Mail, okay? The inner tubes are all clogged. One thing that makes this whole story even weirder than it is that the U.S. Attorney for D.C. released pictures of the evidence they found in this guy's apartments, including high-capacity magazines, multiple copies of licenses and passports, a machine to print new IDs, and these door-opening tools described as a dynamic entry kit. You know, all the things you need when you're making friends. We all remember when John Wilkes Booth shot Lincoln at Ford's Theater, then famously cried, "So is that a no for brunch?" Speaking of the Secret Service, the Biden administration has been pretty low on scandals so far, but we just got a big one concerning former first dog Major Biden, seen here giving the president a taste of his own hair sniffing. Major... What? That's not that bad. That's not... I don't... Major put the Bidens in the doghouse last year when he got a little bitey with the White House staff. At the time, Press Secretary Jen Psaki acknowledged just one bite incident, saying, Major had been surprised by an unfamiliar person and reacted in a way that resulted in a minor injury to the individual. Of course, Major got a little chompy. He learned it from his dad. But now, it turns out the White House tried to bury the real story like a bone in the backyard because thanks to a Freedom of Information Act request, we now know that Major actually bit agents on 8 consecutive days, and newly released emails show Secret Service agents were outraged by the White House's attempts to play down the bites. This is clearly a cover-up, a White House scandal of epic proportions that Fox News is calling Bite Ghazi. Now, stay on the story, Sean. Per the Secret Service, this wasn't just any nibble. Several agents got chomped on their left forearm, right thigh, and right buttock. Okay, that's terrible, but it's part of the job. You're willing to take a bullet for your country, but you won't get your butt munched? Now, we know why the former president never had a dog. He was hauling around a butt buffet. It's too tempting. Who could resist that? It's a smorgasbord. Along with outrage at the cover-up, one agent is still trying to get President Biden to personally pay for a damaged coat. However, the White House did not say whether Biden paid for it. Okay, heard the pup took a chunk out of your Macintosh, bud. Wash it down with a tall glass of backside. Don't worry, Jack. Uncle Joe's got you. Tell you what. Here's a crisp fiver. Take the trolley down to Bamberger's. Buy yourself a nice raccoon coat. Davy Crockett special. Keep the change. Hit the sody fountain. Get an egg cream and a Monte Cristo. Nothing better for a chomp tuchus. L'chaim, Jack. Now. Nothing like him. Nothing. No, absolutely nothing like him. Not even close. Totally, totally gone now. So what became of the chomper in chief? Well, reportedly, Major was given to family friends late last year, but his present whereabouts are unknown. Well, I mean, obviously, he's in witness protection. So keep an eye out for a new neighbor who's short and hairy with the name Rex Not a Dog. there's some news about the news. According to a new Economist YouGov Mighty Mighty Boston's poll, the most trusted news source in America is the Weather Channel, with 52% of Americans trusting it, while the other 48% rely on the second most trusted name in weather, The Window. But there are some 24 hours. That's 24 hours.
Yeah, you look out there.
Always accurate.
Yeah, you check it out.
There are some partisan differences, because there have to be. Evidently, the Weather Channel is trusted by 62% of Democrats, but only half of Republicans, which means there is now an opening for a conservative meteorological alternative, Rupert Murdoch's Fox News Weather News. This just in, a deadly caravan of Mexican clouds is crossing our southern border, bringing a torrent of critical rain theory, to be followed by a rainbow, just more evidence that the gay agenda is bent on flooding your basement. We got a great show for you tonight.
Up next, First Drafts Easter Edition with Evie.
Hey, everyone, it's David Duchovny. Do you ever feel like a failure? Trust me, I get it. Hell, I've spent my whole life almost feeling like a failure. It's appropriate, though, because on Fail Better, my new podcast with Lemonada Media, exploring the world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives, is the whole point. Each week, I'll chat with artists, athletes, actors, and experts about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, I hope we can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out on May 7th, wherever you get your podcasts.
Folks, this weekend is Easter, the day where Catholics around the globe celebrate the miracle that is your 5-year-old keeping his church blazer on for more than 12 minutes. And Easter, of course, means Easter cards. There are lots of good options out there, but they don't all get it right on the first try. So tonight, we'll take a look at some of the early attempts in our segment, First Drafts.
No, no, stupid!
As always, I need some help for this. Luckily, I have the best cardholder slash life partner in the game, my wife, Evie, everybody. Hello, darling. Aren't you a vision? Hello. You look lovely. I love your Easter pink.
Thank you.
Please. Very floral. You look
Thank
fantastic.
You. I think this is sort of like my Easter bunny biker chick look. Mm-hmm.
Darling, you know how this works.
I do. I got it.
So,
2 years.
I know. We've been doing this for 2 years. I have to explain it anyway because some people out there may not know the premise.
Oh, they know. They all
and
know.
Part of the shtick is me explaining it to you, all right? Darling, so what I'd like you to help me with right now, the mockery does not help. So what we're going to do is we have a collection of Easter cards here, greeting cards. The first card that I will hold up of each of these sets is the card that was sold. The second one was the first draft of that card that was not good enough to be sold.
Got it.
Good. Here.
Okay.
My darling, would you hand me the first card?
Oh.
Thank you very much. Here's a fun one. It says, "Why did the Easter Bunny cross the road?" To wish you a happy Easter. See? Very simple.
I can't imagine.
The comments from the peanut gallery do not help the punchline. But the first draft said, "Why did the Easter Bunny cross the road? Look, I don't know, okay? He came out of nowhere. Don't let the kids into the garage until I finish hosing down the car." You didn't mess it up at all.
They thought it was very funny.
You are perfect in every way. Can I have... What do you... We are lucky enough that the kids are gonna come out
yes.
for Easter. Isn't that nice?
Yes.
We've got commitments from all three of them, right?
Yes. If we provide the Ubers, I think they'll come.
Sure. That's great. That's all. The Easter Uber. What do you want to do? Do you want to, like, go out and eat?
We'll go to church? We haven't been to Mass in... Well, except for last
week. We
Sunday.
Went to Palm Sunday. Don't tell the people I haven't been to Mass in a while. I got a reputation here.
There's been a pandemic.
There has been a pandemic.
Yeah.
That's why I haven't been to Mass in a while. Thank you for reminding me. You're getting me in trouble with the Pope here. Candy, eggs, chocolate bunnies, and jelly beans. Have a sweet Easter.
Aww.
That's nice. There you go.
All right. I know your favorite Easter candy is Peeps, right?
We have to get to the punchline. That was the setup. That was the setup. Then
I'm
I have to do
sorry.
The punchline, and then we talk in between the jokes. I know you've become incredibly jaded after doing this for 2 years, but this is what I do for a living. You have to let me do the punchline.
It's so easy.
Yes, it is. But the first draft said, candy, eggs, chocolate, bunnies, and jelly beans we're all sold out at CVS, so the Easter Bunny bought you an iPhone 6 car charger.
That's actually
very useful. Now very we can useful. Talk. Now, I'm
now,
sorry. Now, what did you want to say?
Peeps is your favorite candy.
I do. I hate Peeps. That is, what have you done with my wife's body? How do you not know that I don't like Peeps?
I thought you liked
Peeps. I don't like Peeps. What do I like? What Easter candy do I like?
Chocolate. Oh, you like marzipan.
I do.
Yeah.
I like marzipan.
You like the really
because
fancy.
Because I'm a 79-year-old woman.
Yes.
It's true. I like marzipan acorns, like dipped in chocolate
yeah,
or something
really
like that.
Yeah, fancy.
I make my own marzipan sometimes. Can I have that, please? Thank you. Thank you for being here.
Oh, it's really fun.
Here's a card that says, "I have a clue where some eggs might be, so hop along and follow me. Happy Easter."
Aw.
There you go. That's nice. But the first draft said, "I have a clue where some eggs might be, but you're born with a finite number and you're 38 years old. Get to work. I want a grandchild. Love, Mom." There you go. This one says, "To me, you're like a Cadbury egg, nothing but sweet inside and out. Happy Easter."
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, but the first draft said, "To me, you're like a Cadbury egg. I think we should only see each other once a year unless I happen to be in Europe." Because there are...
That would be tough once a year. That's
it would
tough.
Be. You know, Easter, I know, is one of the times of year when you express some regret for having married me. Because I took you away from the South, where it's spring in Eastern, and like all the flowers are out and the trees are out.
It's not that I regret marrying you; it's I regret that we have to live in the cold
Northeast.
That
I took you away from the South with my job.
You didn't take me away from the South.
We chose to live here together.
Okay.
Oh. New York. I like it here.
I know. Okay.
But it's been too cold
here...
lately. It has been too cold lately. I would like a warmer spring, for sure.
Yes. Yeah.
Right?
You lived in New York before I did.
Yeah.
You introduced me to New York.
Yeah.
You did. What do you mean?
I did.
You did.
What did I introduce you to?
Bodegas that at 3 a.m. sell anything you want. What
else? I'm trying to remember what else. What did we do the first? We went walk the Brooklyn Bridge. That was one of our first things because you don't have to pay for that. Staten Island Ferry.
We were very poor.
Don't have to pay for that.
We were very poor.
Those are two good things.
I was just telling these people earlier tonight that you and I did not have two pennies to rub together.
Not even one.
We wrote each other a lot of letters.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. We had to take one penny, snap it in half, and then rub it like that, like that. But guess what? It's worked out pretty well.
It's worked out. It's worked out.
Thank you very much. I tell the people out here that I'm always nervous when you're on.
Why?
Because I want you to have a good time.
I'm having fun.
Good.
Don't be nervous.
What?
Don't be nervous.
But what if I have you on one time and you don't have a good time? Then you're going to associate...
I'll always have fun.
You will?
Yeah, because I'm here with all these wonderful people. It's so fun. I don't have any lines to learn. I mean, there's no pressure. There's no script.
There's no pressure?
There's no script. There's
no.
I mean, I don't even, you know.
Don't even wait for the punchline.
No, I don't. Exactly.
Here's a fun one. I wish chocolate bunnies multiplied like real ones. Happy Easter. Isn't that nice? We'd have a lot more of them, wouldn't we? But the first draft read, I wish chocolate bunnies multiplied like real ones. I like to watch my candy do it. We'll be right back.
Coming up. Josh Brolin.
Rise and shine, football fans. Start your day the right way with Morning Footy, a podcast that covers every aspect of the global game, headlines, match previews, analysis, interviews, culture, fashion, and plenty of banter. Join as we track the thrills and spills of Europe's biggest title races, the business end of the Champions League season, a summer packed with international competitions, MLS, NWSL, and much more. Subscribe to Morning Footy.
You know my guest tonight as an actor from Avengers Endgame, No Country for Old Men, and Dune. Please welcome back to The Late Show, Josh Brolin.
You know what they thought you were going to say? They were going to go, ladies and gentlemen, surprise guest, Dwayne Johnson. And they were like, Josh Brolin.
It's close. I mix you guys up all the time, man.
Yeah.
At the Oscars, man, you standing next to Jason Momoa. You look tiny.
Yeah, why would you say that?
I don't know, because I don't think of you as a small person, but you look minuscule, man.
There was a clip there where they said, you know, ask him if he's ever been nominated, which I thought was kind of a, like, not a nice thing to ask him because he hasn't been nominated.
Right.
But then when I saw the clip, it was this. Have you ever been nominated? And I was like, so I look like the ass.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought he looked like the ass, the way it was written, but it didn't turn out that way.
Good to see you again.
Nice
it's
to see
been,
you again.
It's been too long. I've enjoyed, I think so.
Not
in
for
my,
me.
From my
Not for me.
Fair enough, You're the guest. You get to name the moment.
I mean, I love you. You're a good dude. I like the gray. The gray's coming
this
in.
This is COVID, man. This is COVID.
Is it really?
Yeah.
You have COVID?
What?
No,
This is the years of anxiety about the COVID coming in. Yeah. I like the gray on you, too.
Thanks. I don't have any gray.
You don't have any gray?
No, I do not.
This is just for a part right here?
No, you're not seeing it
correctly. What about the hair on your chest? Is that gray? Oh, wait, there is none.
There's no... There's... Man. There you go. It's CBS, man. It's CBS. We got... Oh, no, come on. Oh.
Sorry.
You braided it.
Sorry. No, it did that on its own. No, let's just keep going. Look, now the audience is like, please stop.
Hey, listen, you
please
have not been here physically since 2018. And when I talked to you then, right after that, you took a little break from acting. You said you were going to step away from a little bit. But then you get a call from Denis Villeneuve to do Dune, and you go, yes. What was it about that? Why did you break your promise to yourself?
Because it's Denis Villeneuve.
You did Sicario.
Sicario with him, and now we're going back and doing Dune 2.
How old were you when you read Dune?
16.
That's perfect.
I was 17. No, I was 17 because I had seen Dune, David Lynch's Dune, and
David
then I
Lynch's
read it
Dune.
After that.
Okay. Yeah. And so did you? Because I read it when I was, I think I was 18 or 19, I guess. And I thought, well, I have to play Paul Atreides.
Right.
Did you say to yourself at that age, like, did you want to be an actor at that age?
I did, but I've always looked at the other guy, so I don't know if it was... It was definitely not Paul Atreides.
Who
it was
did
probably
you
the be Fremen. Like... It was probably Stilgar.
Oh, wow. Wow.
I want to play every role that Javier Bardem does.
That's not that bad. Javier actually invited me to the set for the Dune 2, for part 2 there, so I'll see you there.
I am going to uninvite you.
Okay. We'll see. We'll see. Because once I'm in the still suit, you won't know. I told Denis, you can't stop me now. Once I'm in the still suit.
No, it's kind of like when we did Everest. When we did Everest, I thought, oh, my God, doing Everest, and we're going to climb Everest in the Krakauer book, and this is amazing, without thinking that everybody looked like this.
Montos is in the wall, darling. I can't breathe. Give me the time of day.
Literally the entire movie, every character. You have no idea which one I am.
Yep. Yeah.
Not a star maker.
That movie was not a star maker.
Not a star maker.
More with Josh Brolin after this.
I'm Rachel Martin. After hosting Morning Edition for years, I know that the news can wear you down. So we made a new podcast called Wild Card, where a special deck of cards and a whole bunch of fascinating guests help us sort out what makes life meaningful. It's part game show, part existential deep dive, and it is seriously fun. Join me on Wildcard, wherever you get your podcasts. Only from NPR.
You collaborated with the Dune's director of photography, Greg Fraser, on this special book called The Art and Soul of Dune. He took extraordinary, sort of candid photography. I'm not going to flip through the whole thing, but candid photography of the making of it. But then you wrote the text.
Yeah.
You wrote the text, and I am just...
I took ayahuasca
swept
and
up.
I wrote the text.
You took ayahuasca?
No, I didn't. I didn't.
All right.
I didn't, but all That's these okay. were taken on film. All these were taken with cameras that he had found, like, all over Hungary, like in flea markets and stuff like that. I mean, really beautiful stuff, but, yeah, here... Just read a few words. Why don't you read?
Yeah. I like this. Would you read this?
I
like read this. What I had the page open to. See where the page is marked? That's a hint that I want you to read that. Read that. Read that, you son of a bitch. Read that right there. But
you have this all planned out, and it's so
sell it. Really sell it, Josh.
A lacerating light lands on more. Again, sorry.
Okay.
This is so putting me on the spot. A lacerating light lands on morning. Shards of orange and black seem to be the colors that reign around you, now us. I reach out knowing your hands will be rough to the touch, but I am still now, mind you. So be gentle if you would. I'll be here for longer than you might have initially had me. The desert isn't as harsh as I believed it would be, but it does, I find, often present what fevered dreams might have slept away unnoticed during the night. And so we awaken because it is morning with a slightly possessed air alive in and around us. I am here, and it has all begun, this reaching and this reaching out again.
Okay. There isn't enough time. That's mine. There isn't enough time for everything that makes me think of, but I'll just go to this. This is not the first time you've done some poetic writing, because look at you here. How old are you in this photograph?
I'm 23.
You're 23, and this is a young, ponytailed Josh Brolin and Allen Ginsberg in a writing class. How did this come about?
I thought I was Jim Morrison. I thought my name was Jim Morrison.
You kind of look like Billy Jack here. I'm gonna kick you in your left ear with my
right.
Oh,
is it? Wait, okay, yeah. So do you want to explain who Allen Ginsberg is for the-
They
for
know
the,
who,
no,
who wrote
20%
Howl.
Of your, yeah, you do?
They know who Allen Ginsberg is.
Allen Ginsberg was in Rochester, New York. He came to Rochester, New York. I was doing plays at Jiva Theater in Rochester, New York. I was doing two plays in rotating rep. I was with Anthony Zerbe, who's this fantastic actor and this great friend of mine. And I said, you have to, like, I mean, it's Ginsberg. Ginsberg was buddies with Kerouac, and sure. You could just have, you know, in your early 20s, that's all you read is Kerouac. You smoke cigarette after cigarette. But he didn't like me. He didn't like
Ginsberg
me.
Didn't like
no, you. No. In that moment, when I'm looking at him, like, kind of longingly like this, and I think he's saying something like, go away.
Wow.
But that's all right. It was yeah. Ginsberg, and it doesn't matter, and I got the picture, so... Wow. You know,
I didn't get the picture, but I met Ginsberg once.
Tell me.
I was... The night I met my wife,
yeah.
We met at this party after an event, and some people have heard this. I won't tell the whole story, but anyway, at the end of this, I'm smitten by this enchanting woman who I met this night, and we're at a party following the world premiere of Philip Glass and Allen Ginsberg's The Hydrogen Jukebox.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm talking to this wonderful woman, and she asks me for my address and number. And I'm like, all right, but I don't have a pen. So I turn around and I ask the guy behind me for his pen, and Allen Ginsberg me his Mont
Blanc. Really? Really?
And I wrote my address down with Allen Ginsberg's his Mont Blanc and gave it to my wife, gave it back, and I went, like that.
That's the only,
that was it. That was my introduction.
That was
the whole Allen Ginsberg.
Amazing. Did you say
what?
I'm Stephen Colbert?
I said, in the future, you might care.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, I'll be talking to a person you really don't like.
Right.
We have to take a little bit of a break, but when I come back, I will ask Josh about his amazing new show, Outer Range. Stick around.
Late Show Pod Show listeners can get 20% off on all Late Show with Stephen Colbert merchandise on ParamountShop.com. That's 20% off at checkout on all Late Show shirts, mugs, accessories, and more with code TLS20 at ParamountShop.com.
Hey, everybody, we're back with Josh Brolin. Next thing I want to talk about here, because we've talked about so much tonight,
mm-hmm.
I want to talk about Outer Range, okay, on Amazon. I've watched episode one, and I am knee-deep, baby. Right. It has sucked me in,
good.
And that's not just a metaphor, because there's a hole in your west pasture that I'm really scared of.
Yeah.
Or maybe there isn't.
Or maybe there isn't.
We don't know. I'm not giving anything away, because that's in the trailers
very
and
good.
Everything.
Very good.
Okay, so for the people out there, tell them what the story is.
I don't know. I'm
okay.
trying.
Okay, but who are you? What character you play?
Okay, I play Royal Abbott. I'm the head of the ranch. I'm the paternal force in the ranch, and everybody, I'm trying to keep the family together. He's all about the integrity of the family. And as this thing that you just mentioned shows up, which is basically maybe symbolic of the unknown, maybe symbolic of our social fabric right now. I don't know.
Maybe
some America,
void inside of him.
A void inside of him, a secret, what it could represent a secret. So once he holds on to that secret, that foundation that was his family starts to crumble. And once it starts to crumble, you have a lot of extreme behaviors that react around
that. We have
that.
A clip here y'all at table. Anything you want to say about this?
No, Hoss, let's just go with it.
Jimmy, giddy up.
We ask that you show us the way here, because we're in trouble. We are desperate. You made this crazy world. So maybe you can give us some sort of hint as to what you're up to, because I don't have the first clue. And maybe it's that you have nothing to do with this, or maybe you're not even there, who knows? There is a big distance between you and us, a gap. a void. There is a great void. I'm asking you to fill that void. I'm asking you to fill that void. I'm asking you to come down here and explain yourself, because this world of yours isn't quite adding up, and I hate you for it. I really do, and I don't even think I believe in you, but I really hate you. Amen.
Yeah. That sells at the end there. That's a beautiful prayer. That really is. That really is. Now, it's a Western on a certain level here. It's supernatural and it's a Western at the same time. You clearly know what you're doing on a horse. And we talked about this before. You grew up on a ranch with a bunch
of horses
there.
I grew up on a ranch. I'm still in the prayer. Sorry. I'm listening to you, but I'm thinking, do you pray?
I do pray, yeah.
At dinner, and so do we.
No, I sometimes, if the family's all together,
that's
we'll
us
do
too,
grace.
Sometimes.
But individually, you know, if it's just me
so
and
So that's
Ev,
something
maybe.
That they took from me, and that's every prayer I for my own family. Wow. Every dinner.
Wow, that's a beautiful story.
Thank you.
That's a beautiful story.
So yes, I rode horses for quite a long time when I was a kid.
But a lot of people, but a lot of people like lie about riding horses, and then they have to go do it.
No. So I did a series when I was 20. When I was doing that, when the Ginsberg picture, I was doing a series, and then I would do plays during the summer. And this series, they audition, and you know, people in New York, and they're like, "Do you ride?" And the guy from, you know, say, I won't say who it is, but Massapequa, New York, he's like, "Yo, yeah, I ride." Yeah, I ride. Do you want me to ride the horse? I ride the horse. I grew up riding. And you're like, you didn't ride. Like, you the Sopranos, you didn't ride, for sure. I grew up riding. I did 65 horses every morning. I fed them. It was horrible. Only in hindsight is this great romance that we talk about. But nobody rode. So if you look at the opening shot of young riders, we're all juxtaposed on horses running. And everybody is at least 14, 15 inches out of the saddle. I mean, there is all space there. There's me in the front just going along, and then there's all the other New Yorkers.
You know, like, wishing they were wearing a
wishing
cup.
Wishing they were wearing a cup. I mean, it was bad. But yeah, I've ridden my whole life.
Have you ever had to lie in an audition?
I've only lied in auditions. Yeah, I've never told the truth during any audition. I mean, sure. I would, you know, when you get a picture taken, you get an 8x10, and then on the other side, you have a resume.
Yeah, yeah.
And every single title on that resume, I made up.
Oh,
because
you have to go in.
You want to be valuable. You want to be like a guy with like, look at all this work he's done. Let's hire him. And I'm like, and you know, I did King Lear, like I was 17. You don't play King Lear when you're 17, but I never read it, so I didn't know. You know what I mean? And then you think, well, what theater? And then they'd call you on it, and they go, where'd you do King Lear? And you're like, in Italy. And then you think, like, what's this? In Italy, I saw The Godfather, Palermo. Oh, he says, in Palermo. I did it at the International Italian Theater in Palermo.
I believe you.
And they go, thank you for coming in. Thank you for coming in.
Oh, my goodness. No. Know it well. Mm-hmm. I know it well.
No.
Well, Josh, thank you for coming in.
Thanks.
This has been The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert. If you're enjoying The Late Show Pod Show, leave us a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Watch The Late Show with Stephen Colbert weeknights at 11:35, 10:35 Central on CBS and Paramount Plus. And for more exclusive Late Show content, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and subscribe to The Late Show on YouTube.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the flag.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You don't want to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown, new season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount+.